a difference a day made. 24 little hours, but the sun and the flowers where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue day. Today, I'm a part of you, day. My lonely nights are through, day. Since you said you were mine, Lord, what a difference a day made. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made. And the difference is you. A day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day made. And the difference is you.
7 days that I've been missing. Give me the taste, give me the joy of summer wine. These are the days that bring you meaning. I feel the stillness of the sun and I feel fine. Sometimes when the nights are closing early, I remember you and I start to smile. Even though now you don't want to know me, I get on by and I go the extra mile. These are the times of love and meaning. Eyes of the heart melted away and found the light. These are the days of endless dreaming. Troubles of life floating away like a bird in flight. These are the days. These are the days. These are. Thought you said our love would last forever, believing that the tears would end for good. I told you that we'd get through any weather. Maybe that didn't work out, but we did the best we could. These are the days that I've been missing. Give me the taste, give me the joy of summer wine. These are the days that bring new meaning. I feel the stillness of the sun, and I feel fine.
what a glorious feeling. I'm happy again. I walk down the lane with a happy refrain, singing in the rain, in the rain, in the rain, in the rain. After years of expensive education, a car full of books and anticipation, I'm an expert on Shakespeare, and that's a hell of a lot. But the world don't need scholars as much as I thought. Maybe I'll go traveling for a year, finding myself or start a career. I could work for the poor, though I'm hungry for fame. We all seem so different, but we're just the same. Maybe I'll go to the gym so I don't get fat. Aren't things more easy with a tight six-pack? Knows the answers, who do you trust? I can't even separate love from lust. Maybe I'll move back home and pay off my loans, working 9 to 5, answering phones. Don't make me live for my Friday nights, drinking 8 pints and getting in fights. To get up, just let me lie in. Leave me alone, I'm a 20-something. Maybe I'll just fall in love. That could solve it all. Philosophers say that that's enough. There surely must be more. Ain't the answer, nor is work. The truth eludes me so much it hurts. But I'm still having fun, and I guess that's the key. I'm a 20-something, and I'll keep being me. I'm a 20-something. Let me lie in, leave me alone, I'm a 20-something. Do-da-da-da, ba-ba-ba-da-da-do, ba-ba-da-da.
Like to have me talk about my future and a million words or so to fill you in about my past. Have I sisters or a brother? When's my birthday? How's my mother? Well, my dear, in time I'll answer all those things you ask. But for now, I'll just say I love you. Nothing more seemed important somehow. And tomorrow can wait, come whatever. Let me love you forever, but right now. Right now, some fine day when we go walking, we'll take time for idle talking, sharing every feeling as we watch each other smile. I'll hold your hand, you'll hold my hand. We'll say things we never had planned. Then we'll get to know each other in a little while. But for now, let me say I love you. Later on, there'll be time for so much more. But for now, meaning now and forever, let me kiss you, my darling, then once more, once more. But for now, let me say I love you. Later on, I must know much more of you. But for now, here and now, how I love you. As you are in my arms, I love you. I love you. I love you.
I look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me.
And suddenly, something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the sky. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hard to handle. Stars in the night, flame in the light, candle to candle. To your razzle-dazzle, you got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. I just wanna cry, I wanna croon, I wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free as a dove, oh, devil moon, deep in your eyes, blind me with love. I look at you and suddenly something in your eyes I see soon begins bewitching me. Bewitching me. It's that old devil moon that you stole from the sky. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. You and your glance make this romance too hard to handle. Stars in the night, flame in the light, candle to candle. To your razzle devil, you got me flying high and wide on a magic carpet ride full of butterflies inside. I just wanna cry, I wanna croon, I wanna laugh like a loon. It's that old devil moon in your eyes. Just when I think I'm free of the dove, old devil moon deep in your eyes. I could have danced all night, I could have danced all night, and still have back for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I never ever done before. I'll never know what made it so exciting, but all at once my heart took flight. I only know when she began to dance with me. I could have danced, danced, danced. Too bad. My head's too light to try and settle down. Sleep. I'm gonna sleep tonight. Not for all the jewels.
got all that funk's my heart to fly. I only know when she began to dance with me, I could have danced, danced, danced.
On the air. We might need you to get your headphones.
Oh.
Well, Kathleen does that.
Hi, guys.
Is that better? Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
My screen seems to be frozen. Oh. Now you're green. There we go.
No,
we're still hearing me, though.
You still hear an echo? Hang on. I'm on my headphones, so I'm not sure why.
Do you have to change the settings on those?
I haven't in the past. How is the echo still there?
Well, let me say something to find out.
Okay, I can hear it. That's different.
Yep, definitely different. We're good. We got it. So, welcome to the Tavern, Kathleen. This is awesome.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it and looking forward to it.
This is going to be a blast. So, anyway, I got to do the obligatory ripoff on the TED Talks. Hi, I'm Salty. Welcome to my Tavern Talk. I just have fun saying it. So, so Fashbird was supposed to join us tonight. She is feeling under the weather. So she's not going to be hanging out with us tonight, guys. But we will see her again in the very near future, I'm sure. You can't keep a good Fashbird down. You just can't. So let's say hi to everybody hanging out with us tonight. And we're going to start with the new platform first. Odyssey ran into a bit of a hiccup. We tried streaming to that one last night. And I guess, like, you actually have to have so much of their digital currency in your little wallet before they really let you run a stream properly on there. And I'm like, I don't have that. And I'm not paying for that. So no. So we're trying BitChute tonight. We had 8 people watching last I checked. So far it's just Arian Eagle and I in the chat over there. So if you want, guys, come over and check it out. On 88 so far, we have Bulldog Breed 88, Joseph D, Lynchy, Deastlander. I think I'm saying that right. Northman, Red 88, Shlomo 88, and of course, Sister Teresa Walsh and White Power Ranger 1488 just popped in. You guys are awesome. Thanks for hanging out in the tavern. And of course, we have our FTJ crew tonight. So far, we've got Jewfinder General, Thomas E. Dwyer, Teuton Fritz, and Arian Eagle. Arian Eagle is in all 3 chats. Let's hear it for multitasking. So good crowd so far. Oh, and Red Fred is also over here. Or he was. I'm not sure if he jumped over. So it's going to be a good time, guys. It's going to be fun. So let's see. Any other housekeeping tasks? Oh, I did. Before we get going, I just did want to mention, I know a lot of you guys would prefer Rumble over any other non-FTJ sites. Like, so this is aimed more at the FTJ crew. If you're not already on 88 or what have you, and you don't want to go to BitChute or somewhere and you would like to see me on Rumble, well, there's a slight hiccup there. I have to have at least 5 followers on Rumble before I can stream on there. So I have 2 so far. So if you guys want to, I think I have my link for Rumble down there. If you want to help me out and give me a follow there, then I can look at getting up on there potentially. So it's a little intimidating. Rumble scares me. Rumble scares me. It seems like the hinterlands. So, see, you got your mug of tea. I've got my fizzy water. We're ready. Drinks in the tavern. Nice. So how are you doing, Kathleen?
Well, I'm doing well. I'm juggling many different hats. I have a hen who is in the house who decided to jump out of her cage. And she's doing okay. I have a kitty cat who's in the greenhouse because the other cat terrifies him. And so I've been managing animals, and I have a brother who is not doing well. And so life is rich, it's full, it's as complicated and as demanding as life can get. Actually, it can get much more intense, but so it's a very real day here. Yeah. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. We're at the end of the school year, so I have one last task to complete for our end of the year review, because we've been homeschooling. So I have to get that written up and submitted to the evaluator to turn into the school district. And then we're done. Not just for the year, but last year. Don't have to do it anymore.
Oh, wow.
Congratulations. Thank you. We're never going to stop teaching him, obviously. But in terms of the red tape we have to go through, it's going to be done, which is fantastic. Oh, Teresa just subbed on Rumble. Thank you, sister. So yeah, it's and end of the school year is always kind of a crunch time. So there's Kermie. Hi, Kermie. He's listening. So yeah, busy with that. Busy at work, trying to get more staff in, and looking at taking time off next month. I have so much paid time off racked up that I haven't had a chance to take in like a year.
Well, good for you. I hope you take it.
Oh, I'm going to. I already have like a full week's worth scheduled off in June. So that's the other thing, guys. I might be taking a break from streaming too in June. I'm not sure of the exact dates and weeks I will be off, but I need to take some time and just hang out with my eagles. We all know how important family time is. So I will keep you guys posted on that, though. So we have stuff to talk about. We have lots of cool stuff to talk about tonight, actually. I know I don't remember if I told you, we were talking about how to define what an e-girl is, right? And I wasn't even quite sure myself. So I was polling some of the guys I know, and I got different answers. So I'm also going to ask all the gentlemen in the chats to also sound off brief, simple explanations, if I haven't already asked you, what you define as an e-girl. And basically it's pretty much what I told you, Kathleen. It's a girl that kind of acts in bad faith and is trying to scam money out of guys in particular, usually by acting in a, we shall use proper words and say, lascivious manner, at least to some extent, greater or lesser. To generate likes, clinks, clicks, clout, and money. So yeah, it's not a good thing. By the technical definition, I guess, you know, we could even be considered e-girls because we are women and we are online and we are talking to groups of people. So I don't think we behave in that manner, though.
Well, the folks that come up with these terms are suspicious to me. And so I have a whole slew of words to describe them, but I'll hold back at the moment.
It's the tavern. This is very casual. You know, you can please share your opinion. That's the whole point of the tavern, is a relaxed atmosphere to kind of speak our piece, you know? So yeah, the guys are saying attention whores looking for simps. Usually infiltrating men's groups and hobbies in particular. Have you heard the term when they call girls a pick-me? So a pick-me is the girl that tries too hard to be like, oh, look, I like sports. I wear sports jerseys. I'm just like one of the guys. But then she acts like a total flirt at best. So similar concept.
So all of this just sounds to me like words that are used that have a slightly different twist because it has to be applied to technology online, but it doesn't sound any differently than when I was in high school. and the terminology. And so, you know, I'm considerably many decades older than most of the people that are watching, and certainly you here. But it sounds a lot like the girls who are flirting and trying to bring in the guy that they want to bring in. And so some people are angry at them for that, and others are looking enviously on because they wouldn't ever dream to behave in that manner, and on and on.
It's definitely the e-girl thing is definitely a phenomenon that has had a negative impact, just like it would have with girls doing this in real life, even when you were in high school. You know, this is not, like you said, this is not a new concept, people behaving in this manner. It's just, as you said, the nomenclature has had to shift to fit the digital format, so to speak.
Well, I don't know so much that I would agree with you on that completely. I think that there is a nomenclature that is being used to keep us from describing this fully. So it's a paraphrase of, rather than speaking the words in full sentences and using words, a vocabulary that at once was flowery and had many words in our vocabulary, and today is narrowed down into an extremely few words. In other words, it's the dumbing down of humanity. I consider it to be a part of the intentional dumbing down of humanity, and we're choosing to accept it, and that's where I see the real harm in all of this.
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely fantastic point. I think it's an angle on this whole issue that isn't usually talked about. It's like, We just kind of accept and roll with some of these phrases as they come out. But as you said, it strips away our language down to, I mean, we're practically back at hieroglyphics. We communicate with emojis, you know, and that's a very real problem. I've run into this problem myself. I used the word elucidate earlier at work, and my coworker, who's in their 60s, looked at me and went, "What?" As you said, it's dumbing. It's a dumbing down. But do you also feel it could be a little bit a way to misdirect from true meaning of words? So it's like they're not only trying to dumb us down, but they're also trying to obfuscate the meanings. So instead of calling something out explicitly in proper language, now we're resorting to, well, what exactly is an e-girl? And it's like, so it kind of muddies the water and confuses concepts as much as it does dumb us down.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's multi-intentional and all in a nefarious way. And so the first part of it is, I think, that if you bring in a new concept and you start using it, it becomes like a fad. And rather than actually having a full description of it, everybody has a general sense of what it means, but nobody actually fully describes it. It's like there's no actual definition from a formal dictionary, so that we don't know if it's a noun, a verb, an adjective. We can't even use it properly grammatically. And then because it is so elusive in its meaning, then we become elusive in our thinking. And so we're not even clear. So when we go to use it the next time, it becomes more of a Pavlovian response to this concept, to the e-girl concept, rather than anyone having any actual definitive knowledge of what it means.
I didn't even think of that. That's a fantastic point. You hear e-girl, you have an immediate knee-jerk reaction, which is going to disincline you to look at somebody that is online producing content, because you're like, oh, they're obviously going to be an e-girl, so-and-so called them an e-girl. Well, they might not actually be an e-girl in that it's a fake persona. They might be, well, as I said, technically I could be considered an e-girl. I'm online. This is pretty much what you see is what you get, though, guys. I'm not pretending anything. But that's interesting. I didn't even think about that. Like, that takes the whole misdirection to a completely different level.
Well, it does. And then it puts it into the level of words like fascism, like communism, Nazi. And most people truly do not even have a definitive understanding of those words. And so whenever they become angry or they're trying to make a point that they think they're making that has some credibility to it, they shout out the word, well, you're just a fascist. And they don't even realize that, no, what they're saying is that man or that woman's behavior is actually communistic. And yes, that if only they could be a fascist in their ideology, someone who supported family values and the freedom to choose religion and the belief in God and the belief in individuality and property ownership. Most people have that Pavlovian response. And then because they haven't even looked closely enough at the actual definition of the words, the true meaning of the words, then they use it as if it's a swear word. And what this is, Salty, this is just being the mouthpiece of the Jew. Yes. And I was looking at something that I had written on my Substack a little while ago, and it was about the dumbing down of humanity. And I have a quote here. It says, quote, "The Jewish stranglehold over the education system has caused a 60% decrease in the vocabulary from 1950 to 1999. That's 25,000 words to 10,000 words. And that's by Mark R. Ellis from the Holocaust Revisionism. Now, if you, and that's just 1999. If you think of how many books a man or a woman or a child has read between 1999 and 2026, you can imagine that vocabulary has dropped considerably since then.
Yes. Oh, especially when you take into account the fact that fewer and fewer people are reading much of anything at all. And if they are, it's usually Jewish crap.
Yeah.
Specifically, like, specific example is the pornographic smutty novels that are pushed to white women all of the time. So now they're hitting you on a couple different tactics. They're dumbing down the language, but they're also twisting and planting degenerate ideas in the mind.
And all through emotions, right? So you read something that's smutty and it appeals to your emotional level. And, right. And so that there's no logic. There's no reason that goes into the thought process. So you absorb that, you take that in at a much deeper level, and you can't even use logic to ponder whether or not you're even going to accept it or what it means. It's going to be, the danger of an emotional state, right?
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this many different times now, where women being designed to be very empathetic, it is a core integral part of who we are, who we are meant to be. That is why they hit us in that every single time. They always hit us in the emotion, in the empathy. And, oh, play the sad music, the Sarah McLachlan song. Well, they show pictures of starving little babies in third worlds, and wouldn't you rather support them instead of having babies of your own? And it's bad.
And I don't even think that's a gender difference there. So men will be, they will appeal to men on an emotional level as well. The fear tactic is used across the spectrum of male, female, and across all cultures and every country. I mean, we saw that through the whole COVID deal. We see it today with, this arranged war between Trump and Milikowski, and all the back and forth on all of that. And it's always, what they're going to amp up one day and what kind of deprivations we're going to all experience as a result of their intentional destruction of the flow of energy across the world. You know, so that fear hits both men and women right squarely, and we all feel it, and it's up to us to deflect it and refuse to go into that level of fear.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. And you know, it sounds like a very trite phrase, but it's very, very true. One I always remind myself of every time is courage is not lack of fear; it's action in the face of it. You know, mm-hmm. So that's where, as you said, we have to go, okay, this is scary, this is intimidating. Well, we got to stand up and do something anyway. You know, even if it's verbally standing up and doing something. So, well, you were working on a project about words and their meanings, weren't you?
Well, I have been, and I'm not very far along on it. But yes, you know, words really do matter to me as a writer, and I'm always fascinated by words. And so rather than speak so much about this project, because it's still in its infancy, but the infancy around that project was the words that are being coined over the last 5-6 years that are replacing our language. And I think every generation there are a group of words that come into being and are used by specific generations. Mm-hmm. But I see this particularly given the computer age ramping up so quickly right now. And in the last couple of years, everything seems to be moving much more, with much more speed. But when I hear words and I don't understand them, like e-girls, for example, I'm definitely suspect, and I generally will refuse to use popular language, and for the very reason that quote I read speaks to, and that is, it displaces our capacity to see something outside of just a nutshell, because all those words are just these little nutshells, and no longer do we actually allow for the variation of what that might refer to. Like you're saying, yeah, you and I would be considered e-girls. I mean, I do interviews and I have channels and you have your stations, and so we're both e-girls, but we don't, when I looked at one X post of a commentary about an e-girl, it's like, I don't think I fit into that, nor would I want to fit into that, nor would I want any of my friends to fit into that, or even my enemies, because it is such a low and base expression of what a woman would do or be. So I'm not saying that very well. I'm lacking words.
No, we understand though what you are saying. Jewfinder General over on ADH just this was perfect. I didn't even think of this example. I'm sure you've at least read to some extent or are familiar with 1984, the novel 1984. Newspeak from Orwell's 1984. If a thought can't be precisely articulated, or if the words to accurately convey that thought do not exist, the idea cannot be spread. Perfect.
And so it's like a cage. It's mm-hmm. it's like our own cage, and we hold the key to that cage. So the more words that we can't express, the more concepts we can't express, the less communication we can have with one another, the more imprisoned we become, because language is our way of communicating. It is our way of presenting who we are, what we're doing, what our concepts are about what's going on. And if we're just limited to these little bite-sized phrases. What kind of communication and relationship does that inspire?
Yeah, it's an extension of that Jewish drive to shrink our worlds that I haven't even thought of until just now. Yeah. Like you say, it's making our minds smaller. What do we rely on most right now? You know, with fascism, National Socialism, is spreading the word. So now if they are hindering our capacity to utilize language appropriately and be able to do so, that's bad. Like, I don't think there's a word bad enough to describe how bad that is. I mean, I could get my thesaurus out, but that would be pedantic.
that's imprisonment is what it is, because what it does is it shrinks the mind. And what is going on currently is it's the intention of controlling our minds. If it's not with fluoride in the water, if it's not the toxins from the pesticides and herbicides or the PFAS from all the plastics, it's the low quality foods that with the excitogens in it, excitotoxins in them, or all the carbohydrates, the sugars that put us into an emotional state rather than calming us. So it's all these poisons that are used to control us, and by shrinking our minds so that we don't have the capacity to express ourselves. I mean, we're expressive beings. And when we stop expressing ourselves, then we stop fully living. What do you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's kind of strange to me that I didn't make this connection before, because I've talked about more or less the same thing in relation to music. Now, I don't play a musical instrument. I am not that kind of talented. But when I was young, when I was in school, I used to write up song lyrics. Oh, you know, right. I would pull the Weird Al Yankovic trick on things before I ever heard of him. I'm like, oh, well, I have this tune. What other words could I make to go with it? I always liked playing with words. It was fun. It was a game. So like the whole music thing, beyond just what they've done to the actual sounds in music, what they've reduced the lyrical content, we'll be kind and call it lyrical content, to, is absolutely appalling. And it's just, I can't believe I never took that one step further and applied that same thought to just everyday speech. Because you're absolutely right. It's a way to further imprison us and dumb us down.
Yes. And one of the things, you know, my mother-in-law used to say to me, she died at the age of 94. She was walking home from Safeway with her groceries, lived alone, and she had a stroke. And poof, she went. But she was independent right through to the end, and her mind was great. She used to say that when you write, if your mind is clear, you can write clearly. But if your mind obviously isn't clear, you can't write well. And so for years, I kept writing and kept writing. I wanted to be able to write clearly. I wanted my mind to be clear. But if we don't use our mind, if we don't use words, if we don't understand the meaning of words, our minds become very stale, very dull. And we reflect that. And ever since I became aware of what is happening in this world, I have refused to be enslaved. And one of the things that I've recognized is that the enslavement really comes with our mind. And I refuse that. So I refuse being lazy with my mind. And that's where also I became impassioned about reading and reading about history. And as I was reading 18th, 19th century writers, Russian, American, British, I was writing down all these words that I didn't know the meanings of. And I became amazed at just how much we have lost just in that short, you know, 200-year span.
But
it's because we're not reading, it's because we're not expanding our own minds. And enslavement is a very small mind in yes. which the Jew can put us. And, yeah. And I just refuse that.
Well, something that comes to mind as you're speaking is, so we know the goy slop, the toxic food, the toxic water and all that, that weakens our bodies and makes us less inclined to exercise physically. And I'm really seeing now that everything, well, and the excuse is, well, just get this device, this gadget, that smart technology to, because you're tired and this makes it easier, i.e. breeding more and more laziness into us. Yeah. It's the same thing with the language. They yeah. have us running so many mental circles every day. Everything they throw at us every single day, it makes you mentally very tired. So it would make more people more inclined to go, it's easier. I'll just use the short form. Like, that's on track for the Jews.
Right. I remember listening to one panel, I think it was Bezos and Klaus Schwab, or I don't know which names it was, but they were talking about those who have the wealth will be able to fly across the world. Mm-hmm. And those who do not have the money can sit in their chair and watch the countries and travel through their smartphone. And, you know, it's that same concept that, you know, if you're sitting, you're not traveling. But if you're actually traveling, you're experiencing the physicality of that place. If you're not reading, your mind is not expanding. It is not experiencing the words. It's not experiencing the wonder of the concepts, of the metaphors, of the similes that are being written down. And if everything is just, again, in that bite-sized phraseology, then we're shrinking. And that's exactly what is intended. And I think we need to ensure that we continue to expand and not shrink.
Yes. And I know I personally, like, so pretty much all my streams where I'm sourcing from any kind of books, I always try and provide free PDF links.
Nice.
Just as a general note, guys, I know I've said it before, but it's me, so you know I'm going to say it again anyway. You can find so many old texts for free online. Now, I absolutely encourage you, go to the little used bookstore, especially if it's a white-run business. Support that white-run business, right? But go to the little hole-in-the-wall used bookstore, you know, troll your local Goodwill or thrift shop. You can oftentimes find the, like, different little paperback copies of everything from the Greek writers on up. I know Erin Eagle has a fair collection of a lot of those, and we keep trying to increase that every time we're out and about. We'll poke around. Well, he'll poke around for books. I have issues with thrift stores. They just give me the fidgets. But I love the concept. I just can't stand being in them for very long. But it's definitely something I recommend. You know, we, at least as of right now, we have this technology. It's all out there. Go to Internet Archives, go to Sacred Texts, go to Project Gutenberg. And there are a lot of other sites. Those are the sources I tend to use, so I like to recommend them because you can find most of it for free. Or like with Internet Archives, you can sign up for a free account because some stuff you have to borrow and isn't just complete free access, but you don't have to have a paid account. There are free resources out there that you're like, well, where am I going to get a copy of the Stoic sayings of Marcus Aurelius? Like online. But yeah, I definitely encourage people to read, especially if it's one of those. Now we're in spring, we're heading into summer, so we're all going to be busy doing stuff because we're white people. That's what we do. Especially over the winter, though, fall into winter, there is nothing better than curling up with a good book and a cup of tea or cocoa, potentially spiked with peppermint schnapps, and just reading. Read a couple chapters in the evening, you know? And you can get a really good copy of Mein Kampf on banned by Amazon, I'm just saying.
Yes.
So.
I recommend adding to that a cat on your lap purring. I usually have one every evening when I'm reading my books. And about the used bookstores, I on Friday was in Santa Fe and stopped in at a used bookstore and found a really great English book called the Theater in Across the World, something of that ilk. And in the back, there was a summary of all the different areas of the world and their most important plays that have been created, written, and produced and performed. And it was fascinating. So I'm reading, you know, of course, the Irish, they're, you know, the bards, they have produced so many incredible plays. I think there were 4.5 pages from the Irish across Europe. I think it was maybe 3 pages. The English, of course, you know, the writers, I think it was 2.5 pages. And you know, it went on and on. And then it had Hebrew writers and had one play, as opposed to like 4.5 pages. And the description of the play was base. It had demonic aspects to it. And it's exactly what everything that I have read about the Jews and their inability to really create anything of substance, of beauty, of worth. No architecture, no literature to speak of. And this book represented it with aplomb. It was just absolutely kind of reassuring. Well, not reassuring. It was kind of pathetic, but there was the information. One play to literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds by the Celts, or hundreds and hundreds and hundreds by the British, you know, the English. And so their language, from what I understand from reading Eustace Mullins, the Hebrew language has only 400 words in that language. And, you know, I always used to think the bar mitzvah was a really grueling experience for the young kids. They had to learn all this stuff in Hebrew, only to find out it's 400 words. I thought, wow, well, that's a big joke.
Yeah. I think a lot of people confuse Yiddish and Hebrew sometimes when hearing it, if they don't know the difference by sound, because Yiddish, and please guys, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't remember precisely, but Yiddish was kind of where they blended the Low German dialect with the Hebrew, and a lot of what you hear, like especially in the Jewish quarters in big cities like New York, is going to be more Yiddish than actual Hebrew. So it can seem more extensive as a language until you realize, no, this isn't actually pure Hebrew. Teresa Walsh came up with a really good forgottenbooks.com. Definitely, I'll have to check that out.
Yes.
And over here on 88, Teuton Fritz said he recommends Charles R. Maturin, Melmoth the Wanderer. I haven't heard of that. I will have to check that out as well. I love book recommendations. I was that kid that read. Like, I learned to speed through I would speed through my spelling tests, because in third grade in particular, if you finished early, you got to sit and read quietly while the rest of the class finished. I'm like, ooh, I know these words. And I got to read. So.
Well, I was always a terrible speller. And because we were taught to spell phonetically, and phonetics didn't make any sense to me, because it seemed like I could come up with many different ways to pronounce something phonetically, the same thing. And yes. So my mind had sort of a dyslexic response to the phonetic teaching of how to spell. And so I got this dictionary when I was in seventh grade, because my teacher told my mother, you need to buy her a dictionary. She can't spell. And I didn't really know what to do with the dictionary, because there was no destination in it. It was just pages full of words, and it didn't make sense. So unless it had some form of destination, I really wasn't drawn to it. But I was a reader, And so even today, using a computer, I dismantle WordSpell because otherwise it just further reduces my capacity to spell and be my own editor. So I find these quick fixes of computers, and it's like food preparation with microwave ovens. There's always some nefarious aspect of it, whether it's destroying the protein of the food or it's dumbing my own brain down so that I can't remember if it's two L's or five T's. You know, it just confuses me.
I feel like my ability to spell at this point in my life depends entirely on my level of caffeine at any given moment. Because I will have days where I could stand there and still remember how to spell words like, you know, obfuscate, but then 5 minutes later, I, for the life of me, cannot remember how to spell the word of. And it's just like I have this mental moment where my brain wants to go, nope, we're not doing anything. You're done. Take a minute. I think it's my brain telling me to take a minute, honestly. It goes too fast. That's its biggest problem. But no, see, I was never a huge fan of the dictionary. My thing was the thesaurus. Like I loved my thesaurus because I was always like, ooh, what different ways can I say the same thing, you know? And how does saying using a slightly different word subtly change the meaning? And that was always fun to me. It was, I would always try to memorize one word a day.
Oh, wow. School. Wow. That's a fine direction. The thesaurus is one of my favorite references as well. I can barely say it today, but yeah.
Well, I feel like this, well, as you said, the dumbing down of our language, it's going to have a bleed over effect on our very speech patterns. So not just the words we say, but how we say them. Are we pronouncing things properly? This was a big debate where I grew up, because where I grew up, there were a lot of Amish folk, but there were a lot of people who descended from the Germans but weren't Amish, but they had a similar accent, but like the grammar was all switched around. So you would say things like, throw the horse over the fence some hay. And it completely changes the patterns of how you speak. And when you take that into the more urbanized non-capacity, like, I feel like, are we adopting sloppier phonetic patterns as well as words and language in a written capacity?
Well, there was a real poetical quality to the way you spoke that sentence structure, because English language can be very, you know, can be lacking in the poetic sound. One of the reasons why Romance languages like Italian or even Spanish, French, why it can be so rhythmical and beautiful, lyrical, why it's used in opera as opposed to English. You find very few English operas because they don't have that lyrical quality to them. So it's very interesting listening to how you said that sentence, because it did have that lyricism to it.
Yep. Has a certain rhythm and pattern. And it's funny, for the life of me, I cannot, my mother, my aunts, all of them, they could replicate that Pennsylvania Dutch accent. I can't, for the life of me, I cannot do it.
Well, with all your other skills, you're not a linguist. Is that what you're saying?
I tried. Okay. I took French for 3.5 years in high school, and I could pronounce it very well. I didn't use it. So it fell out of my brain, as I like to say. I tried learning German for a while on like the Duolingo app, and I got so far into the Der, Das, Die, and I'm like, I'm confused. I did okay with Swedish for a while.
Swedish, I'd say you have the mind of a linguist.
I have the mind of a linguist, but not the not the endurance. And I was never able to stick with it, unfortunately.
Well, it's a little difficult when you live in a country where the language is English and you don't have a place to use it. I studied and spoke Italian and would go over to Italy all the time, but when I came home, there was no one to speak Italian with other than the students in my Italian class. So I get it, you know. It's not the same as living in Europe.
Yeah. Christopher Lee Stettler in our FTJ chat has a message for you, Kathleen. He says, Miss Dudley, don't give up on the dictionary just yet. I grew up with a pre-1863 Oxford with a father that was president of the Latin Club and valedictorian to boot. Learning was a bit different for them. so don't give up on the dictionary just yet.
No, I don't give up on it. I just was reflecting back on being in, you know, in grade school, but how fortunate he was, probably even speaks Latin, or at least has a background in Latin, which I certainly do not have. So what a fine example that he had set by his father.
And that's kind of the shame of it. My family's German on both sides. We're actually only third generation on my father's side, but they didn't retain the language. So like my great grandfather was a young child, and so he pretty much grew up speaking all English. He would have known it, but he didn't pass it on. So it didn't get passed on. And I'm like, dang nabbit, I could have grown up bilingual. Thanks, guys.
Well, I studied French too, because I was born and raised in Canada. And, but I never went beyond high school with French. So I sing in French and German and Italian and you know, all the different dialects, but I don't understand most of it. But singing in a foreign language is very different than speaking a foreign language.
I found it easier because I took voice lessons for a little bit in high school, and I studied an Italian piece for a recital, and it was just I couldn't tell you what it meant, but it just flowed off the tongue. It was very easy to memorize.
Yes, I find that too. I find it easier than memorizing English, foreign language. Yeah,
poetry. If it's poetry, I can memorize it. Like I still remember Jabberwocky from Lewis Carroll.
Go for it.
You guys want to hear Jabberwocky?
Yes, it's a very strange poem. It's very appropriate.
I know Lewis Carroll is a controversial figure. The only reason I remember this is we had to memorize it in English class. Okay. 'Twas brillig in the slithy toves, de gyring gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. Beware the Jabberwock, my son, the jaws that bite, the claws that catch. Beware the Jubjub bird, and shun the frumious Bandersnatch. He took his vorpal sword in hand, long time the manxome foe he sought. So rested he by the tum-tum tree, and stood awhile in thought. And as in uffish thought he stood, the Jabberwock with eyes of flame came whiffling through the tulgey wood and burbled as it came. 1-2, 1-2, and through his vorpal sword went snicker-snack. He left it dead, and with its head he went galumphing back. And hast thou slain the Jabberwock? Come to my arms, my beamish boy. O frabjous day, Callooh, Callay, he chortled in his joy. 'Twas brillig and the slithy toves, the gyring gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe.
Oh,
and it's basically just gibberish. It's gibberish words. None of them mean anything.
No, that was very fine. And your presentation was tremendous. There is something so amazing about Lewis Carroll, because he did take words and he created new words, and he took words and he created new meanings without letting anybody know that he was creating a new meaning with that word. So he controlled the entire narrative. And aside from all the controversy around Lewis Carroll, he has presented to us a way to twist the language and to present how the language has been twisted. And we see that in legalese. And we see that today with how words are reversed. I was in a court case, and I was told by a local sheriff, a deputy, to file a complaint because I was being harmed. And so I filed a complaint, and five years later, I found out that I filed a lawsuit without any awareness of what the word complaint meant. I thought that it had a natural meaning of I'm complaint meaning that I was criticizing or I had an objection to something that occurred. And so I was going to file an objection on behalf of helping myself so that I would no longer be harmed. But in fact, I was engaging in a legal system that used a word, twisted it, and it meant a legal lawsuit. And I couldn't understand how and why the entire 5 years of that complaint went the way it did. And no one, including the judge, acting judge, in the corporate tribunal, had the decency to explain that what I filed was actually a lawsuit. So, you know, words are used. They're legalized weapons. They're weaponized words. Those of us who do not understand it can really go for a ride. So aside from that being a great performance, it really does speak, yeah, to the madness around words, and they're so common people just don't even quite fathom the immensity of the issue.
Well, not it, as you said, it really speaks to the point, because most of those words are gibberish or made up, but they still convey a narrative. You can picture what's going on. You can picture the guy standing under a tree with his sword and this Jabberwocky coming through the woods. And that's just how potent language is, particularly spoken language, can be. It's crazy.
Well, and I could have read that, not as well as you, but I could have read that and it would have given a completely different meaning. So, you know, how it is presented also when it's gibberish, but many things are gibberish, especially when it's legalese, especially when it's intended to be the reverse of the actual meaning of the word. So when we get the word e-girl and we don't even have a collectively fully comprehensible meaning of it, we can go every which way. And there is no comprehension ultimately of what it really means. But when it's used the next time, it has an intent, it has an energy, like you're saying with Lewis Carroll's, it has an energy even though it's gibberish. And in many ways, e-girl is gibberish too.
Yeah, it is. Shlomo over on ADA just raised a really interesting point. This concept doesn't apply at all with tonal languages. So there's no inference when speaking things like Thai, Mandarin. And as you said, you referenced the Hebrew language has 400 words. I forget how many you tend to get in Mandarin alone. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of words. It gets a little ridiculous. But he makes a further point that we use inflection to convey meaning and intent. But there are languages where that inflection just denotes a different meaning. So, yes. Thank you, Christopher Lee Stedler.
Very interesting.
I never really dug into the Asian languages because I was afraid of precisely that. Like you say one word, even just a part of a word wrong, and now you're going from asking for a glass of water to insulting somebody a lot. It's like, I don't want to do that. Oh, Lord. I don't remember that one enough, Arian Eagle. he mentioned a line. Have you ever heard the poem, The White Owl? I don't remember if that's the exact name, and I forget who wrote it, but it's basically who stuffed that white owl. And it's this whole thing where this pompous nincompoop is standing in a barbershop pontificating to this barber about how poorly stuffed this stuffed white owl is sitting up on the shelf, right? And at the end of each verse, it just goes, and the barber kept on shaving. And this guy goes on. There, I forget how many stanzas there are. But finally, in the end, it turns out that the bird wasn't actually stuffed. It was alive the whole time.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I used to have that one memorized. I don't have it anymore. But I may have to brush up on that one for a future stream. So,
well, you know, we had talked about a concept to discuss today, having to do with the e-girl concept. Do you want to maybe touch upon that?
A little bit. I don't want to. I'm not trying to start brush fires. it is an important topic. I think the biggest thing that I would like to see is all of us actual women that are National Socialists, that are fascists, we stand up, we be the ones to police this community and drive them out, so to speak. I think that would be more productive than maybe other methods. And some of that is leading by example, maybe.
And who are you referring to driving whom out?
Oh, just like, are you familiar with the British Union of Fascists back
No.
in Oswald Mosley during and after World War II? They applied a similar concept where, you know, British gentlemen would never hit a woman, no matter whether they were a screaming red liberal communist. They're still not going to hit a woman. So they trained their women in jujitsu because the communists would set women into the ranks. And I think we need to just borrow that concept. So when we see on social media, see women engaging in this toxic e-girl behavior, where they're obviously, they're grifting, they're simping, they're basically trying to take men across for money, prostituting themselves more or less. We need to be the ones to stand up and try and shut down that behavior. I feel like it would be more effective than the men? Maybe. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you know, when I think of the word prostitute, I always think about who ran the prostitution. And, you know, just like who ran the drugs and who runs the pornography. And, you know, so, you know, that's taking on the Jew, really. And, you know, it's unfortunate that there are so many women that are harmed by the Jew, but we've been harmed, both men and women, throughout history by their behavior and by their control and by their, you know, and I'm using the word base as it's originally meant, by their base behavior and their lack of morals. So I don't know. I think being the beacon, being the example, is more productive than trying to run the prostitutes down, because they've already fallen to the assault by the Jew. Their self-esteem has already been destroyed. Otherwise, they would not behave in that manner, or they've never become awakened in the first place to the fact that they are, you know, a woman of value and esteem. And so I think that bright light and that beacon of behavior and action is more effective. And, you know, it's like what Don Miguel Ruiz says in the Four Agreements: what someone else says to you has nothing to do with you, but how you respond has everything to do with you. So if you get down into the gutter and start trying to pull them out of the gutter, you know, it shows that, you know, you've got a heart and soul, but it doesn't show what you're capable of doing, which is to lead with good example.
Right.
What do you think?
No, I think that's actually very well put. I feel that's probably the better way to go, honestly. And when we had talked the other day, we even touched on this a little bit, where it's, as you said, you lead by example. It's also a matter of don't stoop to their level, because to try and fight them in the gutter, you yourself have to get down in the gutter. It doesn't matter if you're not going to conduct yourself with your behavior in the same manner, you're still putting yourself in that gutter. one way or the other. We had also talked a little bit about it's kind of a moot point trying to fight them online in spaces wherever you are. It's still giving them what they want. It's giving them attention.
It's feeding the energy. It's feeding the very energy that they're intentionally using.
So, I mean, it's that Jewish concept, no press is bad press, right? It's all useful. It's all energy. They eat, they literally eat it up. It nourishes them. It keeps their narrative going. We all know that drama keeps people center page with the news, so to speak. But yeah, no, I think it's probably the wiser course of action to hold ourselves to the higher standard and just continue to showcase the kind of behavior we expect from our women, more or less.
I think so, because, I think about my own so-called education since I became awake to what, to all the lies and to the atrocities and to the horrors, and even just through the whole exposure of Jeffrey Epstein. Now, in order to know of the cruelties and the horrors of what has occurred and continues to occur, you have to learn them, because they in my experience growing up, I didn't know that babies were being eaten. I didn't know about adrenochrome. I didn't know about the horrible sex trafficking. I didn't know about the way children and infants were abused. I didn't know about the organ, what is it called, where they're taking organs from live babies and people.
The harvesting.
I mean, the Jew forces you into the gutter. The Jew forces you to have to see their horrors that they feed upon. And so that alone, to me, is an awakening that I prefer not to have to have had, but I've been forced to open my eyes and see it for what it is, in order to then take a stance and say, no more. I don't support any of your behavior, any of your actions, and the fact that pedophilia, for example, is legal in Israel, to me says everything about their, the Talmud, about their practices, about their historical biblical odyssey. To me it is a direction that I refuse to allow in my mind beyond knowing enough to know that I reject everything about that.
Yeah. And it's in any Muslim run country, even if it's not outright legal, it's under religious law for them. Little girls up down to a certain age. Really? You see that a lot with the different cultures in India, because they're not all just Hindus. You've got Hindus, you've got Vaishnava, Shaiva, like they're their own unique Kalurgi mess within a Kalurgi mess, quite honestly. It's kind of all over, except in white European countries, it's incredibly, incredibly toxic. It's disgusting. And I was kind of raised a little bit old school. So my parents were a little bit older when they had my siblings and I, and they were raised a little bit old fashioned as well. So I grew up closer to being like early generation X in nature than the millennial that I technically am. Made it very awkward in school most of the time, but one thing that really stood out is my mother was always so oblivious to the nasty things in life. And she didn't want to see, she didn't want to learn. Oh, I can't watch. Oh, this is terrible. I'm just not going to see what's going on. And some of that is a leftover from her parents' generation where, well, ladies don't need to see ugly things. And while I, as a woman, can appreciate that that desire our men have to protect us, has that hurt that generation? Is that some of why women of that generation in particular seem so oblivious? Because nobody ever said, hey, this is important. You need to look at this. I know it's messed up. I know it's disturbing, but it's happening. It's real. It's going on.
Well, that's an interesting concept. I'd not ever thought about that. And certainly it would definitely create a response and a knee-jerk response at that, like you described with your mother, because it presents a sense of weakness that we must be protected from. And I suppose if there was a man there to protect her from it, that would be one thing. But was the man protecting her from it, or were all those affronts continuing regardless? And I mean, that's one of the things that I see today is, you know, among the genders, women want to be able to be women and want to have a strong man to protect them and their children as well. But very few men recognize their role or understand the posture of being a strong man. And that is falling by the wayside dramatically.
Well, and unfortunately, they had their examples stolen from them as much as we as women did, you know? So many of the young people I interacted with growing up, most of them came, if not from broken homes, but from homes that I often said should have been broken, like it would have been healthier, because it's you don't see good examples, you don't know what to model your own behavior on. So then what do you default to? You default to pop culture. Well, growing up, in my early years in particular, what were you seeing in terms of family life on TV? Al Bundy, Married with Children, that goy slop for the eyes and the brain. It's been a dedicated assault on the family unit overall, and they've continually tried to divide men and women over every little issue. It's really tragic. It really is. Soma says modern men have rejected their role due to unavailability of women partners, due to the kikes pushing hypergamy and promiscuity, so the men check out. You know, and there's validity to that, especially in the younger generations now.
The problem with that is that we always have examples. So here's an example for me. So on the eve of being threatened to be imprisoned for civil contempt, I wanted to know, well, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with this emotionally? I've got responsibilities. I don't know how to do this. I've never been in the forefront of being put in prison. And so I started reading Alexander Solzhenitsyn's The Gulag Archipelago, because I wanted to know, how did the Russians deal with the Soviets coming and dragging them from their homes in the middle of the night and then shoving them into the gulags, being separated from their families, in many cases just taken out in the street and shot right then and there in front of all their neighbors and their family, or raped and then shot or tortured. I wanted to know, how did my ancestors, these people deal with this? So this question is a bigger question. It's about how do we deal with any of these issues that are assaults against us? And so by going back to someone of such sound mental faculties and someone with a spiritual quality to him, where humanity meant absolutely everything to him. And you could tell that by reading his three-part, you know, this trilogy, The Gulag Archipelago. So the first chapter, coincidentally, was called The Arrest. And I thought, oh, wow, how lucky I am. So for the next number of weeks, I'm reading this very long chapter on The Arrest. Thankfully, I had a purring kitty on my lap. But nice. It was, I didn't know that you could be arrested in so many different ways. And over time, I spent a year and a half reading Solzhenitsyn's works because he kept bringing wisdom. He kept infusing all this tremendous courage and strength of his characters into his writings. And I became stronger. I became more courageous. I had a path to subscribe toward. And that's what we can do today. We're not just, you know, flailing in the wind here. There are so many examples of fine writers, of yes. people of courage, of people of morals, of honor, who many died in the face of standing up against all of the assaults. But all we have to do is look to literature, and we will find something to use as a guide if we don't have someone alive. And that to me is incredibly powerful.
Oh, absolutely. 110%. Unfortunately, I think what impacted probably the younger end of Generation X onward, it wasn't just music and art they took out of schools. They started stripping the real literature out of the schools. The reading levels went down. We were talking about this earlier. You know, I was the weirdo. I was the weirdo in school because I was always reading a book. And I went to a small private Christian school where it was definitely more encouraged there than it would have been in the local public school. But I was still an oddball for reading, what was it? Oh, God, Steinbeck. I made that mistake.
Grapes of Wrath?
No, East of Eden. And I read 3/4 of it in one day because I had to do it for a book report. 10 out of 10, don't recommend, at least not in a compressed timeline. It was very depressing. Very depressing. Not saying it doesn't have value, but oh, my Lord. But this was not encouraged to any great degree. In fact, they had to make it an elective in my high school, an advanced reading class. And I'm sure it's the exact kind of books that when you were in high school would have been just part of your main English literature courses. But you had to take it as an advanced reading elective. And of course, you know, almost none of the kids did. So we were discouraged more and more as the generations went on from reading, stripping us from, as you said, those examples. And it's just now that we are gaining momentum and reaching people again, and they're waking up that I think they're starting to reach for those sources. I mean, overall, I'm encouraged by seeing how many people are like, oh yeah, I was reading this. I was reading over in 88. They're trading book recommendations and you know, talking about it on all the chats right now. And I think it's awesome. I think everybody should definitely broaden your literary horizons.
Well, yes, and, you know, of course, if you steal the sources, you steal the access, you cripple us, you know, and we have been crippled, and, you know, you must have been quite an anomaly to your family, perhaps. I mean, that you were reading and that you, you know, came out of that time period with a vocabulary and an understanding of history and literature. I mean, that's phenomenal. But you know, no wonder you have a channel. You know, I'm not surprised. Your brilliance shows through.
Thank you. I don't. For me, it's just like I kind of was like, wait, doesn't every growing up? It always was like, doesn't everybody do this? I felt like this is a normal thing.
Yeah.
How do you find things out if you don't ask questions? If you don't read things, figure them out. To me, it was just always par for the course. That's what you do. You figure things out. But I definitely encourage all of you with kiddos, especially youngins, get them reading. Get them reading early.
Yeah.
And teach them cursive. It's a dying art form. I kid you not. In another generation, we could use it as secret code and they'll never be able to read it.
I remember my mother with 4 children on the sofa, reading to us, you know, The Wizard of Oz, countless stories, and I just loved her mellifluous voice, and we all just, we were in a spell. You know, she could take us places like no one else could, and it was just phenomenal. Yeah. So the parents really do determine their children.
They do. Actually, one of my earliest memories is, and I would have been around 3 and a half, because it was right before and just after my younger sibling was born. My dad would read us a chapter out of The Hobbit every night. Yeah. And of course, I was, up until that point, the baby of the family, so I got to sit on his lap. So it's like you're sitting there and you're got your head on his chest, and you hear the voice resonated, and it's just one of my favorite memories of all time. And that, I think, is really what sparked my love for reading and stories, because, you know, I had to figure out how to read that for myself by a certain age. Tex the Cali White Power Lady. Hi, Tex! Makes a really great point over here on FTJ. One of the worst things we have now is the whole no child left behind in public schools.
Thank you, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. So every illiterate buffoon gets moved up to the next grade in school no matter what. Disgusting, TKD. Absolutely. And when you look at the whole no child left behind, what is that except for Bolshevism? It's communism. It's, well, instead, we want everybody operating on the same level. So instead of bringing up those falling behind, we're just going to bring everybody down to the same crappy level.
Mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. At best.
Yeah.
At best. It's just disturbing. It's disturbing. I'm loving how many ladies we're having in the chat, engaging in the chat. It makes me happy. That's kind of why I got into doing this. I was like, there's got to be other NatSoc women and fascist women out there. So I figured, you know, okay, I'll put myself on a stream and we'll see who comes out of the woodwork. And you know what? I love who's come out of the woodwork. Yourself included, Kathleen.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on your program.
Thank you. I'm loving it. I'm really liking the it's not really a new format, but like slightly revised and brought back to life format for the Tavern Talks, and it's a lot more laid back. It's not so formal, but I think it allows the free flow of thought and exchanges of intellect. That is very, very necessary, you know? So I'm enjoying it, and you have a standing invite anytime.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
We are still going to do the White Power Women's Hour on the first Tuesday of every month, but it's basically now it's Ladies Night at the Tavern. So same concept, just new location. Instead of in the kitchen, we're in the tavern for Ladies Night. So.
All right.
We are already at 9:45. I can't believe how fast that time flew. Is there any other updates, any other thoughts you wanted to go over in our last couple minutes?
Well, let me think. You throw some ideas out. Maybe it'll spur.
Well, you had
mind.
Said something in that last email about sisterhood.
Oh.
And how important and sacred sisterhood can be.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I was thinking about how divide and conquer there's been with the genders. And of course, you know, this goes way, way back. In this book on theater that I bought, there were some plays, many plays actually, and I was looking at how many in the 17 and 1800s were dealing with the issue of gender inequality both ways between men and women. And you know, in reading all about the Romanov dynasty in Russia, you know, it was a 300-year dynasty. And oh my gosh, you know, the men were having illicit affairs. The women were having illicit affairs. I mean, it was madness. There were all these balls, and people would go and they had their lovers, And when the woman was out, the man would have his mistress at the home and vice versa. And I mean, it was just madness. I was actually surprised that there was so much lack of respect for the marriage, for what I consider marriage being the sanctity of marriage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've grown up a lot since I read through those 300 years of history, and so I've been aware for a long time about the, you know, the division between the genders. But what really also gets me is when women don't support one another, and yes. and how that harmfulness has come about. And I would speculate that it was brought to us by the same miscreants as those who brought the division between the sexes, because it would be like the next level. First, you poison the man, you take the keystone out of the marriage, and then and leave the women and their children vulnerable. But then that sisterhood that exists between sisters or women from different families or cousins or community, when that is poisoned, and it's like, wow, that part, it there's a sacredness there between sisters that I consider so precious. And when I see that backstabbing, or when I see the harms that come from one woman against another, I still shake my head in disgust. And what are your thoughts there?
I think I agree with you 100%. And sisterhood is a concept I have struggled with throughout my life. I have two, biologically speaking, but I also have zero in at the same time, because it was nothing but petty drama and competition with them from the first. And whether you were trying to compete or not, they were going to make it a competition and make sure they won. Like, I'm just sitting here trying to read a book. So like from the earliest, it was very confusing, because I craved it. I wanted to be close to them. I feel like as a little girl, and I'm sure it's the same for you guys, you know, please correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like when you are a little girl, you want your sisters to be your best friends. They're meant to be your very first best friends, your best support, you know, outside of your parents, and in some capacities in a very different role than your parents. Right? Your parents aren't going to really understand exactly what you're thinking every single time, but you know, your fellow siblings should, especially sister to sister, brother to brother. And you should be this team, this unit that works together. And that was not my experience. I was not very fortunate. As you said, I was the black sheep, so I didn't form close friendships and a sisterhood throughout school. And it's really now. It's only now that I've finally gotten to experience that, getting to know Fashbird and be so close with her, with you and Monica, you know, Klasha, Texicali, all the ladies that come into my chat, Teresa Walsh. You know, this is just mind-blowing to me, and I love it. I love that we have such a great, healthy sisterhood forming on these platforms. And there's always going to be those other parts of the interwebs. And I think this is just an area where we need to, as you said earlier so beautifully, we need to lead by example and show other women out there what we can have, what should be ours by right is this sacred sisterhood. You gotta knock off the petty backstabbing and the cattiness and the degenerate behavior, although if you're too far degenerate, like, honestly, I don't think I want you back. But I'm not expressing it very clearly, I think.
Yes,
but,
you are. No, it's very good.
You know, I think this is just another example of as ladies, as National Socialist and Fascist women, we need to keep showing that unity and working together and not being afraid of showing that we're working together and reforming this sacred sisterhood. That's how we get more women engaged in this ideology and wake up and move forward. Show them what they probably don't even know they're missing.
Well, I was having a conversation with a man friend of mine today, and we were talking about, you know, relationships. And so I'm going to respond to what you're saying, that this is just a little an aside. And I was saying that, you know, when I was in a relationship with a man who was not authentic, then that lack of authenticity ultimately was exposed. And that lack of authenticity was what basically destroyed the relationship. Mm-hmm. So when we have that opportunity to be able to create that sisterhood with another woman, if that woman is not vulnerable enough to be authentic, then that sisterhood cannot be a sacred union. But when that authenticity is there, then the sacredness is there. And I think that that's true regardless the gender. And unlike you, Salty, I didn't have any sisters. So, and I craved for a sister, and my youngest brother turned out to be a brother, which was one of my biggest disappointments. I remember crying the day of his birth, you know. Oh, seriously. But what you're saying, you know, what do you do with family? Family is a whole other animal from what I have seen. But when we have the opportunity to really have that connection with another woman, and I would extend that too to a man, when we have that kind of authenticity and that support, there is nothing finer. And it does demand the word sacredness, because when someone has your back and someone will stand for you when you are being harmed, and they will stand up with you in that moment, you recognize that you're not in this world of woe all alone. And to not be alone when you're fighting the Leviathan really matters. I mean, because every generation throughout history has been fighting these same Leviathans for thousands of years, hundreds of years, decades. And here we stand today with our eyes open, having read the history, having recognized the lies, and now today having the courage and strength to speak. So if our brothers and sisters don't stand alongside us and give us the support when we fearlessly speak the words, "The emperor has no clothes," then my gosh, what has happened to our civilization? And so I'm ever grateful to you, to Fashberg, of course, to Monica, to all the women who stand with me. Yeah. And have the courage to speak, yeah, and act, because there are so many who are too afraid or who are too damaged. And so what another sister does is it gives me that much more courage in that moment to then take another step and to continue to be that beacon, because we need to be beacons. I mean, there you are. You came out of an environment where obviously you were given everything necessary to be this woman of courage and strength, with a brain and a heart to bring it forward and to connect with your audience and to connect with myself. And I mean, that's a big deal. All of those parts and pieces together in one human being, in this woman. And so I thank you for that.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I got to be honest, it wasn't purely altruistic motives. It was kind of like, I want friends. And I know, and so like, hey, goal achieved. Family, looking for that sense of family has been, I've said it over and over again. I'm sure you absolutely know the phrase, the blood is, that blood is thicker than water. But do you know the actual full quote?
No.
The blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb. So again, as you said, that sacred bond, who you make covenant with, who you form as family, those bonds can be and often are much stronger, much closer, and can be more sacred than just simply sharing DNA. That's why I 100% every time, you guys are my family, you know? Like, I've decided, like, you and Monica are both just going to have to be, like, my favorite aunts, because I can't pick which one is cool. Like, which one I'd want to have my mom more. But no, you guys are family to me, all of you. You guys in the chat, you know, unless you're an asshole, and then you're not so much family.
more like the biological family.
Yeah. you can't choose who you're born to, basically. Texacali had said over here on FTJ, and it's your mouth to God's ears. I'm tired of the infighting. We need to work together, stop all the nonsense, and we're supposed to be here for the same reason and the same purpose. We are a white power family, and we need to start acting like it, or we will lose our family to the Jew. 100%, 110%, 6,000,000%. I can't even elaborate. Perfect statement. So, Kermie pointed out to what you were saying just a little bit ago. This is why they've decimated us. This is why they have broken the family as thoroughly as they have, because they don't want this kind of togetherness, this kind of unity. We're dangerous to them when we truly work together. That's why they push the infighting. Well, we studied a group last night on Fash Academy that is known to infiltrate and subvert in some really sickening ways. I'm glad we did the research on them, but I'm not glad I saw some of the images I saw associated with them. We'll put it that way. Basically, if you ever hear of anyone saying anything about the Order of Nine Angles or O9A, just no, run away. Don't. They're bad news. They're very, very, very bad news. In fact, find your closest like white power dude and be like, hey, go take care of that.
Wow.
Amongst all the other ways they're dangerous, they are also highly, incredibly, intensely dangerous to women specifically. We're just going to leave it at that.
So. I'm studying work by Dr. Rieke Gerd-Hommer, and it's through, it's a 4-year course, and I'm just finishing the first year. And we had a plant in our class. Now, this is a doctor who had been imprisoned in Germany. Well, he's German. He was imprisoned 3 times. He was basically tortured and harassed. He was a surgeon, an oncologist, okay, an internist. I mean, this man was as competent and qualified as any German doctor in the entire history of the world. But he discovered something that would have thrown the allopathic paradigm on its tail. And so he was refused to have his postdoctorate thesis reviewed by other doctors. Because if you have your work reviewed and they can't refute it, then it becomes the doctrine, it becomes the science, and they refused to, because it completely flipped everything about allopathy on its head. And he Now I've forgotten my point. Isn't that terrible? I was going to make a slight point, but I deviated so many times. You know what that's like.
Oh, I do that all the time. We call it going on a side quest.
Yes, I did. And then I ended up in a box canyon with a narrow entrance and no way to back out. So anyway, his work essentially was a result of many years of discovering scientifically what was truth. And he was harassed and he was irrefutably harmed. He was in exile when he died. He was in Norway when he ultimately died. But he was being used as a target, like so many people are, who have truth to speak. And his own family was pulled apart by the materialists who wanted to keep him silent. And I'm still not finding my point, so I will give the floor back to you, and I apologize to everyone listening. Oh, sorry about that.
That is the best part of the tavern talks.
I've had too much ginger tea.
Oh, is that what you're drinking, ginger tea?
Yeah.
I can't do the ginger tea. Peppermint tea, yes. Occasionally, like marshmallow root tea.
Oh, yeah. Is
cinnamon tea, mm-hmm. stuff like that. But for some reason, ginger, I can't do ginger by itself. If I blend it with something else, I'm okay. But by itself, it's too much. Oh. It's just too much.
Well, it's finally raining here, and I needed the warmth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been cold and rainy my neck of the woods the past couple of days too, but we see that a lot up this way. It's like usually the last 2 days or so before Memorial Day, it'll pour rain, it'll be overcast and gross, and you'll wake up Memorial Day and it'll be like I don't know, and then it'll clear.
Nice.
And you get those sunny blue skies with the puffy white clouds, and that's what we actually did have yesterday for the holiday.
But, oh, nice. Well, there's been a drought, a serious drought, a geo
really needed it.
Engineered drought.
Of course.
Yes, it has been tense, and so this rain yesterday and today is a true godsend, I'd call it. And even though it's laced with all the heavy metals that come down with those barium and aluminum and everything else, but I'll take the rain.
Yes.
Thank you very
rain
much.
Is good.
Oh yes.
I couldn't live in like the Pacific Northwest where it rains more than anything else. That would get to me, but I do like a good rainy day. Yeah. Thunderstorms.
Yes.
Thunderstorms. I like thunderstorms.
Yes.
So all right. Well, we're already 5 past the hour, so I think we're gonna get ready to wrap up. So I can move along and get ready. I'm up before the sun in the morning, so yeah, it's okay. I have a decent job actually, IRL. It's not bad. It's better than most I've had in my life. I'm very fortunate. I'm very fortunate. So, I did remember to put all your links that I have for you down below the videos, guys. So definitely check Kathleen out on. I know I have. Well, actually, I can tell you exactly which ones I have, and that way, if I missed any, you can add them in quick. But I have your catdudley.com. KathleenDudley.substack.com. I have your BitChute channel and your YouTube channel. So is there anything you wanted to add to that list?
That should do it. That gives people as round a review of me as possible.
Awesome sauce. So my links, of course, are also below the video. Fashbirds might still be on there as well, even though she was not able to join us in the tavern tonight. And Fash, we hope you get better soon. We're sending you psychic hugs and digital cups of tea.
Really?
Digital chicken soup. So her links are there. If you're not already following her, then I don't know what's wrong with you, quite honestly. But my links are there. And I also believe I remember to add my Rumble channel. I do have one. I have like one video uploaded on there, but Just looking at other potential stream locations, Rumble, of course, is an option that a lot of people already use, but I cannot stream until I have at least 5 followers, guys. So I know somebody earlier said they did go on, and I think it was Bigot went on and followed me there. But if you guys would like to, in the event that we lose FTJ, if you would prefer to see me on Rumble or if that would just work out better, I do need a little bit of help getting there. So if you guys just want to give me a quick follow there, we can get this white power train moving along. Tonight we were actually rocking out on BitChute, so I do have that channel. It's actually pretty easy to stream on BitChute, so that's a good option too. So, you know, you can find my channel there. That link should also be at the bottom. We are going to say so long and thanks for all the fish to everybody in the chat. Over on BitChute, we actually did have a couple people. We had Arian Eagle and Joseph D stop by to say hi. Always good to see you guys. Over here on 88, we had a really good group. Arian Eagle, Klasha, Joseph D, Julius School of Fish. Just ignore me. I didn't. I said your name anyway. Ha. Northman was in, Red 88, Shlomo 88, Tango Alpha Vector, Totenkopf 33, Unruled, White Power Ranger 1488. Let me just scroll back through and make sure I didn't miss. I know Backwoodsman peeked in over here. And make sure I didn't miss any. Bigot Smalls was in. Can't forget Bigot Lynchy was in. You guys are awesome. I have such a good time hanging out with you guys, especially in the tavern. I'm liking this tavern vibe, guys. Teresa Walsh, Sister Teresa Walsh. All right, I think that takes care of our Based 88 group. All right, FTJ. Guys, just got to put it out there. If we don't want to lose 88, we've got to get those pro account subscriptions up. So, you know, two ways you can pay for a pro account. You can do $5 a month or you can pay $50 for the year. It is a little bit cheaper if you can plonk down the $50 at one go. It like saves you 2 months worth of payments basically. I remember when I signed up for mine, it's actually really, really easy to do. I think you can even use a prepaid gift card if you don't want to enter your actual bank information. But it's definitely worth supporting FTJ. It is such an incredible home. I really don't want to lose it. So I got to give that shameless plug. So, you know, go pro on FTJ. Woo-hoo. So everybody hanging out with us over here in FTJ, we had Thomas E. Dwyer, Jew Finder General, Christopher Lee Stettler, Dan Simmons, Teuton Fritz, School of Fish, Red Fred, Kermy, Texacali White Power Lady, Arian Eagle. Make sure I didn't miss anyone. Scoot on up here. Oh, I know what else I needed to do. And I just wanted to say a big thank you to Christopher Lee Stettler, dropped us a dono and said, Snicker Snack, well done. The Depths of the Ancient Mariner next. Oh, I don't know. Maybe the Iron Maiden version of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Good.
The Albatross. And he said you made a really good point. Black's Law invented to cast a shadow past common law. Look up the word Ebed, E-B-E-D. So, the Shah of Kahari has entered the chat, guys. He heard my shameless plug. Was it shameless enough? I can make it a little more shameless. Please don't let us lose FTJ. It's my home away from home. I'm wearing my FTJ shirt and everything, you guys, all right? Because it's FTJ. FTJ is unique. Okay. It is a very unique place. Don't get me wrong. I love 88. I have to give like the biggest of shout outs to all of the people involved in building 88, in administrating 88, putting it together in every capacity. It is phenomenal. And I'm so glad we have it. I feel like having the two sites running concurrently is probably one of the best combos we can have right now in terms of reach and building bridges. So let's keep them both going. Okay. Woo. All right. Also, don't forget, I think I had it at the top. I lost it. Kermy, if you can drop it again quick, that link for the video for Drilla. So he's asking people if they want to write emails to send in to a specific email address. If you have that email address, drop that as well. To basically support him. I played the video and then I lost the link last night, but because he's probably heading into court here next month, I believe it was. So I know that's up on Odyssey and a couple other places. He was talking about it on Dave Gahari's show, the Shah of Gahari show. So you can also watch the replay there to get that information. Alrighty. Okay. I think that's just about everything for tonight. Any final thoughts, Kathleen, before I hit the intro and take us out of here?
No, I was impressed with your summary, your conclusion, all the people who joined in. What a pleasure.
We have a fantastic group of people. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So alrighty then. I'm gonna hit the outro. And Kathleen, if you want to hang out through the outro, we can chat for a minute after the show goes off the air.
Okay.
If you gotta go, that's fine too. I'm just gonna say white power, total Aryan victory, and let's fucking go.
Hiss in the rafters high, gear teeth spin as the bottles fly, smoke scarred map on the cracked oak wall, every border marked from rise to fall.
Hey.
Cinders drift in a war born gale, boots leave mud and a streak of mail.
Hey.
Clockwork parrot on a rusted chain squawks out rumors of the next campaign.
Raise it high in the flying flagon, steel and sorrow in the foam we dragon for the sky. The cannon stagger. We drink to the dead and we spit at the banners. Flying flag on, flying flag and never falls. Yeah.
Hey.
Flying flag on.
Iron jawed captain with a glass eye glow says ports change flags, but the shells still blow.
Hey.
Dice roll hard on a powder. Shattered pain,
hey.
Shadowed hulls over rust red rain,
hey.
Last week's blood in the sawdust floor,
hey.
Fresh cast metals on a friend of war.
Raise it high in the flying flagon, steel and sorrow in the foam we drag it for the sky. Let the cannon stagger.
We drink to the dead and we spit at the banners. Flying flag on, flying flag never falls. In the counter tick, counting down to another trick. Every time another fleet, another song with a missing seat. But as long as pipes still scream on high and the barrel fire paints the sky, we'll stand in the teeth of the grinding years, slamming cups against our fears.
Raise it high in the flying fly.
In the foam we drag and bowl the sky, let the cannon stagger.
Hey.
We drink to the dead and we spit at the banners. Flying flag on, flying flag and never fall.
Flying flag on,
flying flag and never falls.